This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, indeed. Tuesday, live from the Langham. Tony Gwynn Jr., Matt Scraby, Chris Ello out. He's a hot dog eater. And that's what he said.
Yes, he did.
That's what
yes,
he said.
Yes, he did.
miss him. He'll be back at the end, I think next week, right?
Yeah, next week.
He'll be back next week. Until then, you get Scraby, myself, Adam Klug on the ones and twos. I believe Braden's Apprentice is going to join us at some point, right? Or is he joining us?
I'm here. I'm ready to go.
Well, Braden is...
The stream's kind of jacked up, Tony. But aside from that, I'm ready to go.
Well, the stream is pretty jacked up for me because I'm not on it right now. So, therefore, you got the three of us here. Padres back in action here tonight. Dodgers, you know, for some reason, we're still playing 17 games out here in L.A., the last game of the day. Padres off yesterday, still picked up a half a game. The Diamondbacks get taxed by the Giants, who have all of a sudden started trying to play spoiler. They had it just coming off. I don't think they were playing anybody significant the last series, but they played pretty well in that series as well. So Padres' chance to clinch. Tonight, gentlemen, win here clinches a chance for the playoffs. They still had to win a few more in order to seal the deal on hosting a series. But all of a sudden, we got some movement just below the Padres. It had been the Diamondbacks and Padres duking it out, basically, over the past 3 weeks. Well, Mets caught them and now sit in that two spot. The significance of that is that the Padres would then host the Mets as opposed to the Diamondbacks.
I like hosting, but I'm not so happy about facing the Mets. I think the Padres can beat any team, but that team gave them troubles this year.
The Diamondbacks have given them trouble too. I mean, to be clear, that tiebreaker is not settled. I believe it's even right now, and so the Padres. Diamondbacks who has the tiebreaker will settle itself as well in that last series. But I will say this, the Diamondbacks pitching looks taxed. We watched the milkman, what's his name?
Zach Gallen.
He got hit up pretty good in his start. Merrill ended up leaving, I think, after the third inning, even though they won that game. But they've struggled bullpen-wise. It's going on a couple of weeks now, and you have to start to wonder, is that the legit? I mean, I don't think there's a question. I think that's the legitimate weak point of the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that I'm confident going into the playoffs with the Padres is that they have a better bullpen and better pitching staff than most of the other teams that are in the playoffs. Definitely have the better bullpen, I think.
Of course, the Braves and Mets are facing off against one another. So that will set itself up for itself because the Braves are going into that series behind the Mets 2 games. So they got to pretty much sweep in order to take the lead before the last 3 games of the season. And I think one of them plays Philly, if I'm not mistaken, to end the season.
Let me check out the Philly schedule.
I'm going to double check that, but... I think the Padres are in a very, very good spot.
That's
right
the
here.
Cubs and the Nationals. That's what the Phillies have
okay.
left.
Sorry. That's the Cubs and the Nationals. I'm sorry. The Braves are playing the Royals the last three games of the season, and they're fighting for their playoff lights. Braden, what you feeling on this?
On the game tonight, well, you know, in this kind of spot the Padres are in, I think they're in a great spot. I mean, you win tonight, you're in the playoffs. That's check number one, right? One of your goals of the season is make the playoffs. And then after that, you start thinking about your other goals, right? Trying to win the division and other things like that. But, I mean, you couldn't ask for a better situation. The only way this situation would have been better is if the Rockies held on to beat the Dodgers on Sunday, because then it would have been a little bit more obtainable. You know, I think it's going to be difficult for the Padres to win the division. Yeah. You know, that's just based on math. For a lot of people out there that, you know, have been on Craig and myself on the midday show about, oh, you're not believing in the Padres. That has nothing to do with belief. It's just in terms of the way math works, it's going to be a difficult task for the Padres to win the division. Now, they are in control of their own destiny, right? If they win six in a row, they will be division champs and they will have a bye in the first round of the playoffs. But, I mean, you're asking an organization. Now, this is a different team, right? I mean, every year is a different team. But you're asking an organization, the Padres, to go up to Los Angeles and sweep the Dodgers for the first time since 2013. You're asking them to go into Arizona and sweep the Diamondbacks in Arizona for the first time since 2012. And even though it's a different ball club now, I mean, that's still a hard ask. And, you know, for me, when you start getting into what needs to happen in order for you to win a division, and you got to start sweeping teams, I think that's a hard ask to ask a team to go out there and sweep. But to me, it's one game at a time. You know, as talk show hosts, we can sit there and we can look in the future and start playing some games. But, Tony, you know, being in a locker room, being in a clubhouse, you know, just focus on what you can control. Control the controllables. And right now, tonight, you have an opportunity to pop some champagne after the game by getting a victory over the Dodgers. That should be priority number one. And then after that, it's just icing on the cake for the Padres.
I think the best part of what you said there is that as broadcasters, we can look out and play games. No, we can't. We can't. That's what I've been trying to tell everybody. You can't play these things out on your own. These things always are end up different. Now, is it possible the Padres could go in and sweep the Dodgers? Yes, I do think that's a possibility. I think the biggest question is, then are you saying that they would have to, that not you, Braden, I'm saying in general, the people who really want the division, who I think we all want the division, but it is no doubt a tough task, because then you're going to have to go in and at the very least take two of three from the Diamondbacks in that series, which also can be done, but it's a tall order. I mean, that would have the Padres losing three games two games in the last 12 games of the season when they face the Astros, the White Sox, the Dodgers, and Diamondbacks. This is a tall task. If they pull it off, I think it'll be nuts if they pull it off. Certainly would love to see it. But I agree. I think first things first, clinch the playoff spot. Set your sights on hosting a series. And if you do that, I think you give yourself a fighting chance to maybe win a division when it's all said and done. I just think, had these been the last three games of the season, we might be having a different conversation.
100%.
Right. And that's what the scenario was for those who like to bring up 96. That was the scenario. They were down two last three games of the season, and they went in there and they got it done. But to now expand that to another three-game series against a team that's also fighting for their playoff hopes, I think it's a little bit of a tall task. Michael King will go against Knack for the Dodgers, I believe, the following day. What was the... Oh, Jack Flaherty is the following day. And then they can pencil in Bueller against Cease, yes. And then Bueller for the Dodgers going on, Thursday. But yeah, should be a lot of fun. Mets and Atlanta start at 4:20, so we'll be able to kind of follow that one as it goes. How about how about the Mariners whooping the Astros yesterday to pull themselves within 1.5
They're back from the dead. It's like the Undertaker gif.
They tried to sell off the season. Now they're right back in the middle of the shindig right now.
Yeah, Julio Rodriguez found out he can hit again. You know, it's nice. It's great. It's all good.
Brayton, you got nothing, huh?
Seattle Mariners. I mean, the Mariners, dude. It's just, they're hanging around, right? But I was actually, you know, I don't really go back to the Padres, but, you know, just to talk about how difficult the task is at hand. I mean, Tony, you were on a team that had to do that exact same thing in 2010, right? When you had to go up to San Francisco, win three games in a row, took the first two. You know, just from your perspective of, you know, that of trying to win three games in a row as a professional ball club against a team that I think ended up winning the World Series
they
that
won the World
year.
Series, yeah.
You know, what was the mindset for you guys? Obviously, a little bit different because you weren't guaranteed a playoff spot, but that would have forced a game 163 against Atlanta, right, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't remember who it was going to be against, but it's a great question. And what I'll tell you is that everything has to go perfect. And through the first two games, everything went perfect. And one thing went wrong in the last game. You know, Matt Latos didn't have his best, you know, wasn't his normal self. And that was all it took. I mean, and so to your point, for everything, for the Padres to win this division, everything has to go perfect. And so that would then mean carrying that six games over that kind of, you know, that kind of energy would have to last over six games. And that's tough. And, you know, I would also say this, the Padres, in that year of 96 at least, Padres, I mean, tracked down the Dodgers by playing so well last week, and they went in the playoffs and got swept. St. Louis came in there and just ran them over. And, you know, you build up that kind of energy to get someplace, you could empty the tank. And I don't think this team needs to do that. They're right there. You know, they already have made this, I think, one of the better seasons we've seen in this franchise in terms of what they were able to do. But, yeah, it's a tall task. Not saying it can't be done. I want to see it happen. More than anything.
I've said before that this team reminds me of the 2010 Giants, which is a team that, you know, no one really expected them to make a deep run, but they got hot at the right time. They had a team with a bunch of veterans on it. They had a team with some young guys on it. And that's what this Padres team reminds me of. They're hot at the right time. They're heading into the postseason with veterans that know how to play in the playoffs. I think they're set up really well.
Yeah. We'll talk more about these very same Padres. Mark Ziegler will join us later in the 2 o'clock hour. We'll talk a little bit about what's going on with the Mountain West, the Pac-12.
Oh, it's getting crazy.
A lot of moving and shaking, a lot of bluffing and gambling going on. We'll kind of touch on the subject next segment, but we'll really get into it. 2:40 segment. We got a Brayton versus the Fan here today. The Big Five. We'll also tap in with Sam Levitt in the 5 o'clock hour as he will be at Dodger Stadium. I'm here at the Langham currently waiting for some lineups.
That's what you said earlier. You said the welcome to the. I was like, where the heck? You're at
the hotel. What did you think he was talking about?
I thought it was the hotel, but I wasn't
sure.
Forgot to Google it, and then now we're here.
Tony's at some nice restaurant in L.A. Just posted up right now. We're in his Padre gear.
I'm literally looking at a white wall right now as we are doing this show. So
that's not fun.
No, it's not. But it's all good. We got to do what we got to do. All right, let's step away. Let's get to break. When we come back, I mean, even the Los Angeles Times is talking about the Padres and how they could pull off what was at one time thought to be the impossible, which is beat the LA Dodgers. We'll get into it on the other side. More Gwen and Chris.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with ShopPay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
2:19 on the clock. Tony Gwynn Jr., Matt Scraby, Braden Soprano, and the Padres embark on a pretty big three-game series. And not just the folks in San Diego are taking notice of this. Up in Los Angeles, Bill Shaken, who I know very well, certainly has caught, has been paying close attention to the Padres. Big article came out in the LA Times yesterday. It's a big picture of AJ's mug on there with his mustache.
Yeah.
He's well manicured. He's been well manicured all year. Different anymore. He's highlighting the fact that, they started with a little shot. This may not surprise you, but AJ Preller has run the San Diego Padres for longer than Andrew Friedman has run the Dodgers. Not by much. The Padres hired Preller in August 2014. The Dodgers hired Friedman 2 months later. And since then, this is the part where he gets the shot off. Since then, the Dodgers have dominated the National League West. For the Dodgers, 8 division championships, 3 NL championships, 1 World Series championship. For the Padres, this part was especially stabby.
Bitter.
0-0-0.
Yes.
all true, but nonetheless, a little shot. But it, basically an article, they're making the point that, for the first time, outside of the 2020 season, the Padres have a chance to finish closer than they ever have, if not catch the Dodgers before the season, ends. And he goes into a lot of the really brilliant moves that AJ has made throughout the course of the season, and how it's kind of lined up with the Dodgers and some of their issues they've had this year. So it's not just in San Diego. They're noticed, despite what I'm sure LA people try to convince everybody on Twitter that they're not paying attention. They're paying attention.
and that's great, because I told you about this yesterday. There was a Dodger fan on Twitter over the weekend trying to plead with Dodger fans to realize that he wasn't hating on the team. He was just being truthful that this team might not be built to go to the World Series this year, especially their pitching staff. So, that shows that the fans are thinking that way.
I honestly don't know how you can come to the conclusion that everything you've seen, I know they signed Shohei Ohtani, but there's been nothing that you've seen this year that says that the Dodgers are built for a World Series run this season. Like, if you're just being honest and objective about it, right? They don't have – this is probably the worst starting pitching they've ever had in this whole run that they've been on. And worse because you got a bunch of dudes hurt. You got a bunch of dudes not throwing well, coming off of injuries. So I don't know how you can come to a conclusion that this team is in for or has a World Series based on what we've seen that they're constructed for a World Series run.
No, I don't think so. I mean, you mentioned the pitching wins in the postseason, right?
100%.
I mean, that's what it is every time. And you have to have good pitching. You also have to have some good bats to hit the other team's good pitching. But collectively as a whole, I like the Padres roster top to bottom better than I like the Dodgers roster top to bottom. In fact, you start looking at the teams that they're going to compete against in the National League, not just the Dodgers, but the Padres in the postseason. I like the Phillies team more than I like the Dodgers. I think they bring a scarier atmosphere.
They're also hungry.
Yeah, but at the same time, and their pitching staff's better. In terms of the pitching staffs of just the teams that are in the postseason and then maybe the one team that might miss out, you know, I like New York's pitching staff better than the Dodgers. I like the Padres' pitching staff better than the Dodgers. I like the Phillies' pitching staff better than the Dodgers. And honestly, you know, the Dodgers don't have anybody like Chris Sale. And even though Atlanta's pitching staff is not on the same par, probably it's probably close with Los Angeles, you know, you got the Cy Young probably winner to start a series if the Braves make the playoffs. I mean, I would rather play the Dodgers in a best-of-three-game series based on the pitching matchups than have to deal with Chris Sale in Game 1. So from a pitching standpoint, you know, I think it's safe to say the Dodgers have the second-to-worst pitching staff in any of the teams in the National League. They're going to make the postseason. I think it might be a little bit better than Arizona, but if you really want to dive into the weeds, I'm sure you can make an argument for both the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers to have a better pitching staff against each other. And if pitching wins in the postseason, I'm not necessarily worried about the Dodgers' pitching staff compared to all the other teams that the Padres might have to face. And the other thing, too, I mean, it just feels like this year, and granted, I don't want to curse the Padres for these next three games.
Yeah, be careful.
It just feels like the Padres have just had the Dodgers number this year, Tony, and in the games that they have played. And you look at that lineup, I don't think anybody's got a better top three in baseball than the Los Angeles Dodgers. But you start looking at the lineup from top to bottom, the bottom three for Los Angeles is just, I mean, as Chris Ello likes to say, there's a lot of AOs at the bottom of that batting order for the Los Angeles Dodgers, where I'm not necessarily afraid of that spot either. But I just feel like, Tony, you've watched a lot of these games. It just seems like the Padres have had LA's number this year.
They have. There is no getting around that. The Padres have played better. They've done a lot of the things that the Dodgers have done to them in the past, right? They've slugged them and pitched them to death. And when it matters, I think the games have been close. Don't get me wrong; these ain't been blowout games. I mean, the Dodgers are still a really good team despite their flaws. But the Padres have done to them what the Dodgers had been doing to them for a long time. You know, they need a big homer. Somebody can go Profar hits one out. You know, you need a big night. It seemed like it was Profar a lot in the Dodgers series.
Extra motivation, Tony.
Right. You know what I'm saying? So, like, it's that has been true. You know, and Brent, you can't curse. If they lose, it ain't going to be because you said that they had been playing well.
No,
all
I'm
going to
blame it on
him. You know,
I don't need
last thing I need is Scravy mentioning me on Twitter getting everybody.
It will be.
I got to deal with everybody
every
on that.
5 minutes.
I saw in the chat. And I think it's very interesting for both you guys. But, I mean, think about our attitude as Padres fans the last couple of years of, you know what, you only have to beat the Dodgers in five in the postseason, and the Padres were better built to beat them in a best-of-three or a best-of-five. Now, you look at a potential series with L.A., I like the Padres' chances in seven based on how the pitching lines up. What a difference a year makes, but also to really emphasize just how the Dodgers pitching rotation has fallen since the last couple of years. Now, some of it's injuries, but you know, we all got injuries we got to deal with at this point in the year in the for the playoffs. But at the same time, I mean, that rotation the Dodgers had, and I go back to 2020 when the shoe was on the other foot, right? And the Padres had Lamet banged up, and they tried to go with Clevinger on an injury, and they had Chris Paddock starting a game, and Craig Stammen had to start a game for a win for the Padres. I mean, they were limping in with pitching, and you're like, well, I guess we got to only have to beat them in five. But you start looking at it now, I like the Padres' chances in seven against a lot of teams in the National League compared to years past, where it's like we only got to get them three times.
And we can think
here's what I'll say to that, and I think it's important that we mention it. The Padres, although they have had injuries, they haven't had injuries that, you know, knocked them out. And I say that to say the Padres have been fortunate from that standpoint. Yes. There's been, you know, you had to miss time for his personal stuff that was going on. You had Toddy miss a little bit of time during the season. But this is what has made this to me the best roster put together, is that they were built to be able to sustain while guys were out. And typically, that is what happens to the Dodgers. This isn't the first year the Dodgers have had injuries. They typically have had the depth to hold things down.
Yes, but they've always had some young guy to come up and fill in the spot.
They've always had that. This is the first year that I can remember in a while where they didn't have the depth that they're used to having, and the dudes who had picked them up in the past aren't those guys right now. And on the flip side, the Padres, although they've had injury, they've been able to avoid really major injuries, especially in the pitching staff. I know Joe was the one that kind of dealt with it, but he's bounced back from that. He's been able, and it happened. It's all about timing, right? These injuries for the Padres happened in areas where it wasn't like you could sustain it, and it was early. Now everybody is coming back healthy and is healthy. The Padres clearly have an advantage. I wanted to get into Mr. Fisher's letter a little bit today, but I think
we'll have plenty of time for that.
That's a major eyewash.
The one thing I want to tell everybody,
the audacity.
I know
people sometimes. Go ahead, Scray. What you got?
No, the one thing I wanted to tell everybody is that I didn't realize this yesterday, but in his letter, he misspelled Loma Prieta earthquake, and he spelled it Loma Prieta. I'm like, first off, it was kind of weird to mention an earthquake like that before, but he spelled it wrong. You got to get it right. You have to have someone check that like seven times.
Because he didn't read it.
Well, he didn't write it.
He didn't write it or read it.
And now Jessica Kleinschmidt is posting on her Twitter of the Oakland Coliseum with the in the outfield in center field. It says, "Thank you, Oakland." So, like, where was all of this love for the last 18 years? They're like packing in all love into the last three days, basically three games.
Yeah,
at the Coliseum.
I can't think of the word.
They must have not got the season tickets, memberships for Sacramento next year that they were hoping for.
Oh, my goodness. I talked to someone who lives in Sacramento. They're like, this is a disaster, and it's not even begun yet.
I doubt the Players Association really wants to sign off on that either. And they haven't signed off on it yet, haven't, right?
No, they're going to do it. It's going to be a tall task. Just telling you, like, the amenities, the things that you need that you don't even think about, for a big league team to be in there, it's just different. It's gonna be a big job for the folks who run that stadium in Sacramento.
Like, I hope that they have more than just troughs in the bathroom, since we talk about troughs a lot. I hope that the professional baseball players get to have their own little stall. I think they've worked hard enough to get some little bit of privacy.
You know what troughs make me think of? And this is for the folks that have been Padre fans forever. It makes me think of Yuma. That's all they had.
Yuma spring training facility.
That's all they had. That's was
gross.
Troughs. Just long troughs.
That reminds me of Norman, Oklahoma.
Oh gosh, these are places I don't want to go.
And Knoxville, Tennessee, man. That's where it's at. SEC country's got a lot of those.
A lot of troughs. Right.
A lot of troughs right. out there.
let's get to break. A lot bubbling in the Mountain West Pac-12. Kind of who's staying, who's going. Mark Ziegler, the one who is most informed on this deal, will join us next. We'll talk a little bit of San Diego State and how they align with what's going on. More Gwynn and Chris on the other side. 2:37 on the clock. Tony Gwynn Jr., Matt Scraby, Braden Suprenant. A lot going on right now in college sports. Teams changing it up in terms of their conference. Old conferences adding new people to the mix. And we need to sort it out. Mark Ziegler joins us here on Gwynn and Chris, San Diego Union Tribune. Mark, how's your day going, my friend?
It's going okay. I got my my conference scorecard out. I'm writing it in pencil, not in pen. Scratching, erasing stuff out. Change every 10 minutes.
That's probably a very wise decision to go with pencil here. Just talk to us a little bit about what's going on. I mean, the Pac-12 came out last week. They had a lot. It seemed like they had a lot of momentum. San Diego State was one of the additions. This week, It seems like the plan that the Pac-12 had has been somewhat had some cold water poured on it. The teams from the AAC, at least at this point, have elected to stay. You had a few of the teams that the Pac-12 had their eye on elect to stay in the Mountain West. And then Utah State decides they're going to jump ship. Where are we at now, and how do you see this thing kind of shaking out?
Well, that's a pretty good description. I think the initial plan was from the start because, you know, I don't think those Mountain West schools are jumping into a league not having any idea of who else is going to be in it. And so I think the whole plan from the start was going to be the two leftover Pac-12 teams, Oregon State and Washington State, the four that jumped on September 12th, San Diego State, Boise State, Colorado State, Fresno State. And then they were going to add three from the AAC, Memphis, Tulane, and either maybe South Florida or UT San Antonio. And then they were going to go get Gonzaga. That would get them to nine, give them a nice 18 conference football schedule. You play everybody else once. And then they're going to go get Gonzaga, which, you know, they've been talking to as a 10th member, just playing basketball and other sports, but not football. And that seemed to be the whole plan. And they got the first six of it done. They just couldn't get that done. They weren't, as far as I understand, along as they thought they were with those schools. And the AAC jumped in knowing that they were trying to leave and sweeten the pot probably, and they decided to stay. And all of a sudden you're in scramble mode. You know, the Gonzaga thing is off the table, or not off the table, but in limbo right now. And now the Mountain West takes all these exit fees and poaching fees that the Pac-12 and the departing schools are going to have to pay, and throws them back at their members saying, hey, you want to stay? We'll give you some, you know, little financial enticement, you know, for the effort to stay. And all of a sudden they're staying, and it's a scramble to just get teams to fill out your league. And that's kind of where we're at right now. Utah State decided to go. UNLV is on the fence right now, and everyone's waiting for that. And I think that would be sort of the big domino to fall next, one way or the other.
Real quick follow-up on that, Mark. You talked about Gonzaga and that being tabled for now. Does the Pac-12 want to get the football side of this thing done first before they go the Gonzaga route? Or is Gonzaga looking at it like, you know, we want to make sure you guys got your ducks in a row first before we start jumping that way?
That's a good question. I think it's the latter, because there was a report yesterday that the Gonzaga deal was done, and all of a sudden the Gonzaga officials are calling everyone who will listen saying, oh, no, it's not.
Okay.
And I think they're looking at this thing going, is this league really got its, you know, crap together here, or is this kind of a circus that we're jumping into? And, you know, it's probably a little bit of both at this point. I mean, conference realignment's never clean and linear. It's always messy. And so, you know, will they end up in the league? Yeah, possibly. I think they would have really liked to see Memphis in the league.
Yeah.
You know, a big-time basketball power that has a big arena. It has a lot of NIL. And a long history of being very good, one of the best non-power conference programs out there, along with, you know, programs like San Diego State and Gonzaga. And so I think that was a big enticement. With them not in the league, I think it becomes more of a 50-50 proposition for them. Mm.
Talking to Mark Ziegler here of the San Diego Union-Tribune about the Pac-12 Conference, Mountain West. And my question for you, Mark, is we heard from J.D. Wicker that they did not accept a spot in a bigger conference. I believe it was the Big 12, because they weren't going to get a full share. And I think a lot of people are split on whether that was a good decision or not. What do you know about that, and what do you think about the decision?
I'm really glad you asked about that, because I think that, you know, that was a quote in a story I was writing about the Mountain West. And I had asked them a question about, you know, making sure it's financially viable. And the question was in the context of if you leave the Mountain West and go to a Pac-12, and you know you might get a little bit extra TV money, but say you get only $2 million per year and you pay close to $20 million in exit fees, it's going to take you 10 years to pay that back and make yourself whole again. Is that financially viable? And his answer was, anytime you look into this, you have to look at the financial viability, and you use that as an example. Now, I think it was taken out of context, and maybe I should have provided more. I thought it was kind of we've already hashed this over. But what happened was they were talking to the Big 12. The Big 12 said, well, if we invite you, it will be a half share with really no path to getting a full share. And San Diego State at the time was also talking to the Pac-12, which said, look, we'll get you up to a full share pretty quickly. And geographically, it made more sense. It's what they always wanted to be in. And so they just kind of pushed forward with the talks with the Pac-12. And as we know, came within literally hours of being part of that conference. a year ago. And then the whole thing falls apart. And then the Big 12 deal was likely, almost certainly going to be contingent on four Pac-12 teams not coming. If those four, you know, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah decided not to go to the Big 12, then maybe the Big 12 is more interested in San Diego State and they could further those conversations and have another share. But once those four schools came to the Pac-12, all those offers, they were never really on the table, but they were never going to be on the table at that point. I hope that makes sense.
It did, yeah.
Yeah, it does make a lot of sense, and you know, being the resident Big 12 fan of the group, it would have been nice to see the Aztecs in the Big 12. Obviously, if they could have been able to pull that off, but you know, my question for you, Mark, about you know how this is playing out. I mean, obviously, it seems like it's a little bit better than the Mountain West, but you know, the big sell to a lot of people, at least I think from a perspective that a lot of San Diego State fans have, was, you know, this is going to be a path to potentially being a power conference with some invites and kind of holding out hope for, you know, maybe Cal and Stanford to come back or what have you. Based on how this progressed yesterday with a lot of schools saying no and then some schools on the fence, with it being a lot of the same schools already in the Mountain West, How much of a boost to the TV deal do you think they could potentially get? Obviously not seeing any of the numbers. And, you know, as this slowly starts to play out, how much more of a step up is the Pac-12 conference going to be for San Diego State in comparison to if they just would have saved the money and not left the Mountain West?
Well, there's a lot there. I think, you know, the short answer is yes, it's a step up. Is it a big step up? No, it's a little baby step up. It's not the step up that anybody wanted, including J.D. Wicker and Adela De La Torre. Obviously, they wanted to be in the real Pac-12, not this version of it. I think the big question is going to be how TV networks view Oregon State and Washington State, because basically you're coming with, you know, the upper half, maybe not even all the upper half, but maybe the upper, you know, schools in the upper two-thirds of the Mountain West, and then you're joining Oregon State and Washington State. We're in a power conference, but largely we're in a power conference because they joined it over 100 years ago, and they just kind of were along from the ride. They weren't really the revenue drivers in that conference. Every now and then they'd have a good team, football team or basketball team, but by and large, they were just on the coattails of UCLA, USC, Stanford, Cal, you know, Oregon, Washington, all those other schools. And so how will the TV networks view them? You know, if you look at I saw a stat, I think Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports posted, since 2016, you look at the average television viewership and where they rank nationally. Washington State, I think, was 43rd, and Oregon State was in the 60s. And all these Mountain West schools are in the 80s, including San Diego State, for the most part, either because they don't have much of a national brand or because they have a smaller market or whatever the reason. But the problem with looking at that, saying, okay, you got a number 43 and you have a number 63 or whatever it is with Oregon State, is they were playing Pac-12 schools. They weren't playing themselves. They were playing, you know, USC, UCLA, Oregon, Washington in big games where you'd attract viewers from elsewhere. What's their value going to be when they're playing Fresno State on a Friday night at 7:30? And I think that's what the TV networks have to figure out. And that's why there's such a big fluctuation in what they could get versus what they might get. And will they get more than they are currently getting in the Mountain West? I would think so. Are they going to get significantly more than if the Mountain West is stuck together? Maybe, but is that enough to offset $18 million in exit fees? Probably not. And so that's where the tricky part of these negotiations come into play.
Mark, a few days ago, I think it was, the Aztecs hoop team released their non-conference schedule. What do you think of it? I mean, there's some names that stand out, but how would you rank this this non-conference schedule versus, you know, maybe some of the ones in the recent past?
Well, as I wrote, it's the shortest they've had in like 20, 30 years. And that's a function of the Mountain West going to a full double round robin, a 20-game conference schedule. It really leaves them with only at maximum 11 games. They're going to play nine, and it just makes it really hard to schedule games. You have to play a conference game in the first week of December, which is a pretty popular window to get non-conference games. You got to play one right after Christmas, where they usually played their final non-conference game. It just makes it really tricky when you've got you got finals week, which is almost 10 days where they don't play games. You have a Christmas break, you have Thanksgiving break. So it's really hard to get enough games. They've got nine, and it's a hard schedule. It is really hard. I mean, you've got five really, really hard games. You've got Gonzaga, Creighton, Oregon, and Texas A&M in a 12-day period with no games in between them, no soft landings, no games against a path to sort of work on things. All four of those teams probably will be ranked. And then you've got a neutral court game against Cal. It's in San Jose, and just like they played Cal in a neutral court game last year in San Juan Capistrano in front of all Aztec fans, that one probably is skewing more towards Cal fans. So that's not quite a road game, but it's more like a road game. So that's a tough game as well. And now you layer on that a very young team. This is going to be the youngest Aztec team we've seen in several years, particularly when you go back 2 years and you look at the team that played for the national championship. The entire rotation were junior, senior, fifth-year senior, sixth-year senior. And this is going to be, you know, three freshmen are probably going to be in the rotation, and one of them is probably going to start. So it's a big change for them, and it's a big change early. So I think people got to just put their expectations, understand they might not eat a winning record by the time we get to Christmas, but this team, by the time they get to February, with the kind of talent and size they have, the coaching they have, could be pretty good. And that's going to be the story of this season.
That usually is how it works for this Aztec program. They get better as the year goes along. This is kind of the inevitability, though, Mark. Like, you have these older teams for so long. Eventually, the young ones have to have a chance. I'm looking forward to it, most certainly. Mark, we appreciate
you. I'm sorry to cut you off. I think it's going to be one of the more interesting and exciting in that way teams we've seen in recent years. I think the other ones, you kind of knew what the floor was, you kind of had an idea what the ceiling was, and then where they're going to go. This one, the difference between the floor and the ceiling is enormous. And so, you know, it's going to be, we'll all just have to pull up and get our popcorn and see how it goes.
Yep, everybody get your popcorn ready. Mark Ziegler, San Diego Union Tribune. As always, Mark, thank you for coming on.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, my pleasure. Talk to you guys.
Mark Ziegler, San Diego Union Tribune, breaking down the chaos of the Pac-12 Mountain West Conference.
It is chaos.
It's chaos, and, you know, don't get me wrong. I will take the baby step up, but, man, they were that close to being part of that conference. But, you know, in some ways it's better that, you know, it, this way, because they would have hopped into that conference. The moves still would have been the same, right? USC, all those schools still would have left. And so then it would have looked, I feel like it would have felt worse at that point. Then we hopped in thinking it was one way.
You'd be in the three pack right now.
Right.
The three pack.
You'd be in a three pack, which is half of a six pack, which is not very good. Nobody wants a three pack at the gas station.
No, they don't even sell those.
No.
They do. Tall boys.
They sell three packs.
Tall boys.
Tall boy three pack, yeah. Okay. So you think you're getting the same.
At least they're tall boys, though, at that point.
Yeah. You got the 12-ounce three-pack right there with San Diego State, Washington State, and Oregon State.
I
was very critical of this move when it first happened just because of the
potential.
Well, I don't get it. I don't get it from San Diego State. It's a slight advance. I guess they had to make a move. I don't get it from a Washington State, Oregon State perspective either, where they have this gigantic asset in San Francisco called the Pac-12 Network. And there's like two conferences that want it. And I just feel like it was a panic move by them to start piecing this thing together because they had a timetable.
What are you suggesting that they did with it?
I think, well, the thing was, is everybody's waiting for the ACC and what's going to happen with that lawsuit with Clemson and Florida State. Because if Clemson and Florida State win that lawsuit, they're going to bail, and then you got all these teams going all over the place that are Power 5 schools that, you know, they could be able to jump in on, or maybe they get added to the ACC with their network, or maybe they get added to the Big 12 with their network. There was a lot of different plays for Oregon State and Washington State. I just feel like they felt the pressure of 2026 and having to be in a conference that they just had to strike as soon as they could, and to me, it just doesn't feel like they had a full plan together. And I thought yesterday, with four AAC schools saying no, was a tough blow to the Pac-12.
It is for now. I would say that the timeline is what had them make the move the way they did. There's no guarantee that lawsuit's going to be done anytime soon. before you would lose out on the automatic status that the Pac-12 has. So I think they kind of had to move when they did. It wasn't ideal, certainly. You were hoping that that ruling for Clemson and Florida State would have already come. It hasn't. And so you got to start getting your ducks in a row. The thing that could end up happening is, you know, you get your eight teams, and then you know, the lawsuit, let's say it comes through and or it finishes up and Florida State comes and win, then you still be able to bring some of those other teams on that are going to have a hard time getting into any of the other conferences. So
yeah, going to have to compete with the Big 12 or some schools there, but at least, I mean, Boston College sounds a lot better than Wyoming right now.
Nah, I can't. I hear no lies there. All right, 3 o'clock hour on the other side, a little Daily Gambit coming your way. More Gwen and Chris.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.